Welcome to Mad Lit Musings, a podcast with Jamie Jo Wright, where we go deeper and ask the tough and dangerous questions. Hey everyone, it's Jamie Jo Wright here at Mad Lit Musings, and today I have a really dear friend of mine who has just released her debut novella, and I cannot be prouder, so hear me scream it from the rooftops. Please meet author Kendall Hoxie.
Hello.
Hello. Actually, you were on the podcast earlier this year as an aspiring author.
I was.
I know. And now look at you. You've got your own novella out.
I know. Well, I have to say to your listeners, I was about to say readers, but listeners, they were so sweet. I got some really nice notes that
that's cool.
Like, oh, you gave me such hope. Like, I hope to do that one day, or my kids want to be writers. So it was so sweet.
That's awesome. And I love it when listeners do that and they reach out to the guest authors, because you need encouragement to keep going and to know that you're making a difference too. So that's awesome. Yeah. Well, your novella is part of a collection that is out. So the collection itself is Holiday Menace Collection. It's a romantic suspense collection. And we just had a podcast with three of its authors, Jerusha Egan, Sarah Hammaker, and Terry Weldon. We're just on the other day and we had them on here. But now it's your turn, because you get the limelight on this one, Kendall. You don't have to share with anyone. And your story is called An Imminent Christmas Threat. So tell us a little bit about this new book baby of yours.
So we have Samantha Hoxbridge, but she has changed her last name, but she's going back home to Potter Valley to try to make amends with her past. Some terrible things happened to her 6 years before. And so she's been living with her daughter, who's a little six-year-old, Cora. And then she's coming back, but she found a job with another winery. And so you just kind of have to go from there.
Yeah, because you can't say too much or you're going to spoil it.
I know. So that's like, spoil that.
I know. That was what we found when we were talking with the other ladies that are part of this collection. Yesterday, we were talking and they're kind of like, well, I can say a little, but with novellas, they're even shorter than a novel. So there's only so much you can share.
So I'm like, okay, I can give that little nugget of like, she's changed her name.
That's right. She's changed her name, which usually signifies this is not going somewhere good.
So. No, some bad things happened.
Well, I've actually read this novella, so I know what happens and I have to be careful. I don't spoil it either in this conversation. Oh, fun. So, you know, one of the things I like about this novella, though, is it's in a setting and a location that you don't see as often, at least in the Christian market, but I think is a location most people really appreciate. So tell us a little bit about not just the location and the setting, but even your own personal background.
I'm a fifth generation grape grower. So, actually just this year we've celebrated our 120th harvest.
Wow.
So in my day job is we're still through harvest. I wanted to write something that, showed farmers, because, you know, growing grapes is still farming.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Even though it's wine grapes.
That's okay. It's agricultural.
A little more glamorous than corn.
I don't know, around here, people still do stuff with corn that's a little bit as cultured, let's say. But
well, I mean, the saying we have is there's a lot of beer that goes into making wine. So,
I love that.
But anyway, so, you know, I grew up in Napa Valley and I didn't want to do Napa Valley because sometimes it has a little too much of a Hollywood feel.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I chose Potter Valley, which is part of Sonoma, but it's a little further north. So it's kind of in the Mendocino, Sonoma area. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got the similar location. You've got the rolling hills. You've got some beautiful weather most of the time. Mm-hmm. It can be a little cooler because they are closer to the ocean than Napa Valley is.
Yep.
But yeah, and it's a little lesser known. So yeah. That was something that appealed to me.
Yeah, I like that concept because yeah, Napa Valley is so well known. Mm-hmm. And then you have this smaller, it felt in the novella, honestly, it felt a little bit more intimate. And I don't know if that's true to the area.
It can't. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of nice little towns. There's this place when you're going through Sonoma called Jimtown.
Okay.
And it's just one street. It's just Jimtown.
Oh, fun.
And it's one word, Jimtown.
And it's J-A-I-M or J-A-I. That would be how you spell my name. J-I-M.
Is it? Yes. J-I-M. T-O-W.
Gym. Okay. So not G-Y-M as in the workout. Lose weight, Jim. Okay, got it.
I was James Jim.
Well, we've established that now. So
yes, yeah. So I mean, there's all these fun little pockets that you can find in Northern California, and because you know we're not the palm trees and the ocean, and I mean even because I don't know if a lot of people know this, but the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, is a lot colder than the Atlantic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when people go to the ocean, you're just shivering. It's so chilly.
They always make it look so warm when the surfers are out surfing. It just looks like it's delightfully 82 degrees water.
Maybe outside, but yeah.
No, not the water. What is the temperature? Do you know what the average is?
Depending on the area, I mean, I would say probably you're in the 60s, maybe 50s.
Okay. Yeah.
My husband used to go, not snorkeling, mm-hmm. scuba diving in the mm-hmm. Monterey Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he had to buy thicker scuba suits because it's so cold.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't live in the tropics. We've established that.
No, we may get to, last summer we had 119 day one day.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a scorcher.
That's a scorcher.
Yeah.
The winter, yes. I mean, and you're going to laugh coming from Wisconsin. I'd say the difference is because, you know, like, oh, it's so cold here in the wintertime. But because we've got the swing from freezing sometimes at, you know, 3 in the morning, so 32 degrees, and we can go all the way up to the 70s, but then we're going to go right back down at night. So you've got a really evolving and a large range, and it's not overcast. It can be, so we don't have, why am I blanking on the word right now? Humidity.
Okay.
So even in the cold, you guys have that humidity.
Yes.
That
Yeah. We get a lot of humidity, and then you have the snow and everything. And I don't know why I was researching it, but somehow I was researching cornfields in Wisconsin and found out that they give off up to 40,000 gallons of water a day in Wisconsin, which is one of the reasons why Wisconsin is such a humid state in the summer. Cause you always hear about the Southern states being humid and people kind of like, oh, you're from Wisconsin. You don't know what humidity is like. And I'm like, some days are like 86% humidity here and it's 98 degrees. And you're just like barely able to breathe because the water in the air. So
I always thought you guys had humidity. Like,
yeah, it's the corn
too, and all the other
things. The corn. So why we need to grow grapes in Wisconsin. Let's just switch everything over to wineries and wine valleys. It'd be great.
You found a Wisconsin wine bottle.
I did.
Passions.
Oh, fun. Okay. So that's one cool thing that I think sets your novella apart is the fact that it is in wine country. Even though wine isn't necessarily the sole focus or central focus of the book, but it's just a neat element of setting that I think readers will really enjoy because it's different and it's unique. So kudos to you for that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's their job, it's their livelihood,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it's a vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But it was fun as somebody who's not, one from Wisconsin. So we're not, there's a few wineries here. I'm not going to say there's not, but it's not part of our culture. And it was interesting reading your novella and just the little things that you put in the setting, like even as she's going through the winery or having different conversations with different employees, you're like, oh, that's interesting. Like, it's just, it wasn't too sciencey or too industry, but it was just enough to go, that's a side of life I just didn't know about. So.
Well, good.
That's really cool. So,
good. Thank you.
So this is also suspense and Christmas. And I was talking on the other podcast with the other authors in this book. I'm kind of like, why do you think people like the element of suspense and Christmas in one conglomerate combination. So I'm going to ask you the same thing. I won't tell you what they said.
I think because with Christmas, it's the possibility of anything. I mean, you know, you're celebrating obviously the birth of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, miracles can happen and you know mm-hmm. that everything's going to be okay. So yeah. That's at least what I would say, you know, to come off the top of my head.
No, I love it. I love it. And, you know, it was funny too, because I was thinking even after I had the podcast interview with them yesterday, was even the Christmas nativity story, if you really look at it, is very suspenseful. Not that I want to glamorize it by any means, but I mean, you look at the things that were happening and King Herod, like, was literally, there's a genocide around Christ's birth that doesn't usually get talked about as much. And it really does contradict. You have the birth of Christ, which is this extremely hopeful thing for generations to come that we know, but they didn't necessarily know then. And then you have King Herod, who's, you know, going through like one of the first Holocausts of the, you know, I shouldn't even say the first, because there were so many different times that they went through.
Well, but
genocide, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, because I was showing my children Prince of Egypt. Mm-hmm. And so my daughter was asking me about that. And I said, well, sweetie, you know, how do you explain to a 5-year-old?
Right.
Why? But yeah, no, so go back to your question. Yeah. I mean, some horrible things. And I have a 1-year-old son. I mean, I can't imagine mm-hmm. what Mary must have been feeling and going through that, you know?
Right. Right. Well, know. It's kind of one of those things too, not to get off on a rabbit trail, but I love rabbit.
That's
trail.
What we do.
This is what we do. Great. So get Kendall's book. Okay. Now we're gonna talk about the nativity. So, but no, I was thinking too, you know, like, Mary, she's told by this angel she's going to have like the child of God, which is weird. I mean, let's just be honest, as a human, weird. And then she gives birth. But I was thinking too, like, as somebody who's read scripture, I know the story of Christ's life, but she didn't have that. So they're really like, even when they fled to Egypt, it's like she hadn't been given a promise by God that she was going to give birth to the Son of God, who would be the savior of the world and is going to live to X amount of years. She was just told she was going to have the Son of God and then walk in faith, because you're just going to have to roll with it.
Yeah. I think that that's such a lesson for us today in our time, is that, you know, we've got phones, we've got instant communication, we've got everything.
Yeah.
But we're still struggling with faith. And I think even, you know, everyone from the past 2000 plus years ago, mm-hmm. their faith is so much stronger than ours is. And I don't even know how to connect that, but yeah, I mean, talk about faith.
Yeah. No kidding. There's so much about Mary that I admire. And I know with the diverse backgrounds of different people and different doctrines within the Christian church and within Christian history, there's different emphases put on Mary depending on what denomination, etc., you come from. But I think one thing that is a little bit of an injustice to Mary that a lot of the evangelical Protestant churches, which is where I come from, has done, is they've almost diminished her so much to being so human, that we're afraid to acknowledge how amazing her faith really was, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't even know where I'm going with this, but she's a hero, you know, she's a heroine of the faith. Like, she is like this woman that doesn't get enough page time, right? Because of all the stuff that she did and what she was going to go through watching her son, and then all the way up to the crucifixion, which I can't fathom. I mean, if your kid is 1 or your kid is 33, I don't think it's going to make any difference as a mother when you see something like that happen.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I grew up in Catholic faith and confirmed Catholic. And I will say this for Catholicism, we give a lot of credit to Mary.
You do. Yeah.
You know, we've got the Hail Mary prayer and
And it's not just a move in football. It's actually a Hail
Mary. Not at all. And her feast day. And so I will say this, they give a lot of credit to the women. And I'm a millennial. And so at least that was kind of the beginning of a little more feminism and things like that.
Right.
And even so, they'll give credit to Mary Magdalene and a lot of other things. So, I mean, I appreciate that because in a lot of ways, being a mother, there's no other job that compares to the love, the joy, and the heartache.
Yeah. Yeah. There was interesting story for me personally. So one of the verses, and I don't even remember where it is because I'm horrible with references, but there's a thing where it says, and Mary pondered all these things in her heart. And I've always loved that phrase, kind of like you just kind of take pictures with your heart to a degree, and you question and you ponder and you wonder, where is this leading? And my daughter was born on December 29th. So it was right after Christmas, and she was born 3.5 weeks early, and her lungs were underdeveloped. So she wasn't breathing really well. And so probably after about 10 hours, they decided they were going to move her to a completely different town, city, take her by ambulance. They had a security guards because it's an infant. They had doctors, etc. I'm laying in bed. And of course I'm crying because I haven't even held her. I'd held her for about 3 minutes is it. And now she's already almost on her way to being a full day old. And you could see her breathing. Her rib cage would come up and her stomach would suck in because she was trying so hard to catch breath. And I'll never forget, and maybe it was just because it was Christmas, I don't know the doctor's religious background at all, but he came in and he put his hand on my knee and he goes, "Be like Mary, ponder all these things in your heart, because there is a purpose." And I'll never forget that. I don't know what he meant by that 100%, but just the background of knowing "be like Mary" reminded me of her fleeing to Egypt to save Jesus, and Herod coming in and wiping out all these babies, and just thinking about the fact that, okay, I don't understand what's going on right now, but Mary had faith. I can have faith. And I think that's when Mary honestly became really real to me.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
And she always has been just kind of that heroine of the faith. And so anyway.
Oh, that's a sweet story. And knowing Chloe, I do know, she's totally fine.
She would take on Herod single-handedly with her personality.
Yeah, she would. You've got a feisty one there.
Oh, yes. And I think it served her well as an infant because she was quite feisty. But I remember the same doctor when we went in for one of her checkups a couple months after she was born. She also had those big blue eyes. And she was she's always been intense. And he was taking her heartbeat and all stuff, and she wouldn't break eye contact with him. She was just staring him down at like 3 months old. And he looks at me, he said, "Don't take this the wrong way, but she is the most unsettling child I have ever met. She will not break gazes with me. And that's not normal for a 3 month old."
What are you doing?
I know. Oh, fun. But yes, and I think all of this stemmed from that question of how does suspense and Christmas go hand in hand, really? But I think life is that way.
It is. And, there are certainly days where I love a good running from the mob, giant conspiracy theory, and maybe you're doing your job all along, and then all of a sudden secret operative, like, "I've come to save you." And there's a place for that novel. Trust me.
Yeah.
They do quite well.
Yeah.
But at least for me, and as a, first time writer, I could only truly do something that at least was a real life suspense that I could understand.
Yes.
And I would, maybe someday I'll get better and I can write this gigantic story arch of, all these other things, where it's like, you're the chosen one and you're going to save the world. It's like, oh, that sounds cool.
Your own version of Jack Ryan.
My own.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
That intrepid guy.
I know.
So at least I wanted to make my novella something that's a little bit more, down to earth, I guess.
It is. Yeah, it's true. And honestly, I think readers will relate to it to a degree. I mean, any suspense in fiction can sometimes be sensationalized a little bit for the sake of entertainment. However, the suspense that is built around a single mother coming home, a history of family dysfunction and difficult relationships is, I think, honestly going to strike a chord with a lot of readers too, is something believable.
Yeah. And coming from a family business myself, there's so many emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I am so grateful that, you know, being a fifth generation, that we've made it work. But it's a lot of faith and it's a lot of hard work. And giving understanding that I can't react at this moment.
A lot of communication, I assume, too.
Yes. Well, and you have to learn, someone's not always going to communicate how I want to communicate.
Yeah.
I mean, so we've done the DISC deal.
Yep.
And I would say certainly to a degree, I am a D, but compared to my dad and sister, I am an S. I am the steadfast one.
Yeah.
Government relations, doing kind of the, you know, the Girl Friday tasks.
Right.
Versus my dad, who is the managing partner and has been since he was in his early 40s.
Okay.
So, I mean, he's the patriarch of the family, even though his mom and aunt are still alive.
Okay.
And then my sister is in charge of selling the wine. So she's very influential. You know, she could sell ice to the Eskimos, as they say.
Yeah. Yep. I hear you. Yep.
Yeah.
I always like that personality one, the DISC. If people listening don't know what it is, DISC is DISNC. And each letter is resembling of a specific personality type. And the D is usually more dominant and direct. And the I is influential, like you said. And the S is, what is the actual?
Steadfast.
Steadfast. That's right. And then C is...
I consider conscientious, but basically C, and I forget kind of the,
I always compare them to a beaver. They're the ones that are very specific and analytical and they make great accountants.
Yes. So that's probably the best, you know, comparison.
Yeah.
You know, they like their numbers. They like the facts and they are very introverted.
Yes.
Yeah. So whereas on that same scale, they'll be with, well, I have to think about it. Sorry, I'd have to see it in front of me.
I know, right? It's been a long time since I took mine, but I always registered as a I with
shocking,
influential, which are, you know, the playful otter type. And I had some subsets of the S being steadfast and loyal and all of that too. But
well, and I think it's important for everyone to know also, no one is just one thing.
No.
You've got pieces of all of that.
It's because you throw my kids in the mix, I will suddenly become a high D very fast if anybody goes at my kids. I will dominate, confront, and do anything. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Well, it just depends on the day.
Exactly. Well, that's true too. And whether I've had my coffee. That's also true.
Well, and as the non-coffee person, I need my tea.
Okay, and this interview's over. All right. Oh, that's funny.
Sorry.
What was it? Somebody posted the other day something about their tea and how their day wasn't going really well. And I was like, and that's because you started it with tea. Like, hello.
Well, coming from this Anglophile, you know, it's a perfectly lovely drink.
It's very beautiful, very beautiful. A little bit of sugar and a little bit of cream goes a long way in your tea.
Okay. Well, I drink it black.
Well, you're not even proper English then.
Probably not.
No, I think that's probably more of an Irish thing. I don't know.
Well, anyway. I don't know. Anyone that is not watching this on YouTube, you know, I am a very obvious redhead. So
yeah, you're kind of obviously Irish, which is fine. It's not offensive to say it. It's a stereotype. No.
Irish, Scottish, you know.
Irish, Scottish. I mean, not everybody who's redhead is Irish or Scottish, but.
Well, you want to, so we're going to go down this other rabbit hole.
Okay, other rabbit hole.
I studied this origin of red hair. So.
Oh.
It all stems from Russia and the Norway, Sweden, Finland.
What?
Yes. So that's kind of where it all started. You know, they're all kind of fighting there. And then, you know, as Norway slowly went into Iceland, and then you have all the Viking raids.
Right.
And they're going down to Ireland, Scotland, England, and then, you know, then we're all dispersing. So yes, it all kind of stems from around that area.
Interesting. Interesting. And then you have like the Norwegian that is so blonde and so...
Yeah, so that's at least my understanding of where everything came from. And
makes sense. Right,
because the last four daughters, the grand duchesses, they had all different shades of red hair too.
But, you're right. I do remember hearing that.
Yeah, but Alexandria was, Alexandra, sorry, mm-hmm. Was German and British. Mm-hmm. So it all kind of, you know, circles back. But yeah. At least... Yeah. Western Europe is definitely the hub of redheads.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. And then I had talked to a scientist once. We were talking about stuff, and he mentioned that redhead was also scientifically because of a mutated gene. Mm-hmm. And his summary was basically redheads are mutants. So there you go.
Yes, my friend likes to do that joke of the Jews were going to take over. 2% of the population, and unfortunately I was because my grandmother, my mother, myself are all the redheads, and I was praying for a redheaded daughter, but
no, you got a cute little brunette though.
I got a spunky little brunette.
Yes, you did. She got the personality of a redhead.
She sure do. but actually Jack is, I don't know, he's a very light brunette. We might show some shades there, which my husband's laughing about. I said, stop. He's not going to be Carrot Top.
Yeah. Oh, I have a nephew who's a Carrot Top. Like, true to the word. Like, it is full on blaze orange. He okay. doesn't even need to wear orange to go hunting in the winter because you can spot him a mile away. But okay. Anyway, this is a blast. And yeah. We are really on here not to talk about Mary or red hair or mutations and all the random things that we've talked about. We are actually here to talk about your book, which is an intimate Christmas threat novella, part of the Holiday Menace collection, which has authors like Jerusha Egan, Mary Alford, Lori Altebaumer, Danielle Grandinetti, Sarah Hammaker, Kendall Hoxie, who we're talking to, fangirl, Karen Kirst, Pat O'Brien, Hope Wellborn, and Terry Weldon. So, I mean, snag the book now because it is on sale, from what I understand, through December 31st, and then will no longer be available as a collection.
Yes, it goes away, and then it's up to us. So you'd have to then buy each 10 stories by yourself.
All right.
So please, it's only on Amazon Kindle. Mm-hmm. Purchase it there.
Super affordable. $4.99. That's like ridiculously.
Yeah.
I mean, that's less than 50 cents a story.
Yeah. So, and it was a blast. I mean, everybody, you know, so you've got myself and Hope, and there might be one or two other newbie authors, but you've got some veterans in there, and mm-hmm. and it was a lot of fun. And I think it came together really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is great. This is great. Well, Kendall, I am ridiculously proud of you. I am so thankful to God that we've met and joined our lives in friendship over all sorts of weird conversations. And now we have given all the readers insight into what our regular conversations look like. And yeah. I might lose subscribers, but hey, you know, it's okay. But hopefully you'll gain some readers. That's the key.
Well, yeah. So I can't share too much, but at least mm-hmm. In October of 2024, there'll be a new novella, mm-hmm. A historical Western fiction. Mm-hmm. And then another project that'll probably be January of 2025. Mm-hmm. Will be a fairy tale retelling.
This is exciting. So yeah, you guys are all going to want to follow Kendall. And what's the best ways for readers to follow you?
So I do have a website, and the newsletter, I promise, is coming. So authorkendallhoxie.com, and I am on Facebook as well as Instagram a little bit more regularly, but author Kendall Hoxie for both.
Perfect. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Kendall, for being here and joining us. And with these other releases coming in the future, I'm sure this isn't the last time.
Thank you, Jamie. It's so such a pleasure and honor to be with you.
Thank you for listening to Mad Lit Musings. You can find out more information about Mad Lit and all that it has to offer at madlitmentoring.com. That's madlitmentoring.com. Or check out more about Jamie Jo Wright at jamiewrightbooks.com.